Welcome to the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. I'm Sam Kink, owner of Therapy Dogs Australia, psychologist, animal assisted therapist, and accredited dog trainer. With over a decade in the field with my team of dogs, I'm here to share practical advice, honest stories, and expert insights for professional therapy dog handlers, dog trainers, and canine enthusiasts who want to live and work ethically and expertly with their canine co-therapist.
And I'm Max, your co-host, Therapy Dogs Australia's creative lead and passionate dog owner, here to ask questions and bring curiosity as we explore this fascinating industry together.
So, whether you're a seasoned handler or just starting out, this podcast is here as a professional development resource to support you and your dog on your journey throughout this exciting industry.
While chatting to a range of inspiring people about our absolute love of dogs and the power of the human-animal bond. And don't forget to follow, subscribe, and leave us a review to help others find us too.
In today's episode, we are very lucky to be speaking to the lovely Christine Waters. Is it Waters or Waters?
What comes out of the tap with an S?
Waters. Okay, so we're going to be talking to Christine today about some ethical stuff, which I know everyone's going to be really interested to hear. Just before we get started, I just wanted to take a little moment to recognize the beautiful little Wilbur and Lucy, who you will all know as Amy's dogs. Amy's one of our course facilitators and dog trainers. Most of you will know, because we did post on the Facebook a couple of months ago, that Amy did lose Wilbur. He is a senior dog, but you know, it's never easy. It's very hard. He's a very special little guy. And unfortunately, last week, Amy also lost Lucy as well. So really tough time, especially, you know, having no dog. I'm sure we can only imagine, most of us, what that would be like. So I'm sure some of you have been through it as well. But I just wanted to recognize the legacy that those dogs have left behind. Amy did an amazing job with them, and she worked with them in her school job. And the dogs had a really great impact there, and, you know, flawless careers. You know, they finish strong, and it's nothing more special really than having a dog work and a career and be successful and all the way to the end. So really, really special thing. Very, very sad time for Amy. She's doing okay. There is a puppy on the cards who are coming up that's in discussion. So we're looking forward to that, and we'll be keeping everybody posted if and when Amy adds a new family member. But yeah, just take a moment, everybody, to thank Wilbur and Lucy for their hard work over their years and all of the joy and love that they brought to all of their students, and the way that they helped shape Amy as well. Amy first trained Wilbur with us years, and might have been one of our first courses. It could be 9 or 10, like years and years ago. And then we were looking for a little bit after that, we're looking for someone to help us with our admin, and Amy came on and did that. And then we were looking for someone to help us with facilitating courses, and she was obviously the perfect choice for that. And so that's how many of you know Amy, is from her facilitating much of the courses. But yeah, RIP to Wilbur and Lucy, and welcome to the world, new puppy, when you arrive. Okay. Christine, we're here today. We've got some stuff to talk about. It's a little bit sensitive, so we're going to be careful. I already know the story, so I think we can work around it. But just to introduce Christine, she is a primary school chaplain and has a background working as a social worker in child protection, counselling, and family mediation. So we're going to talk about an issue that popped up at your school, but do you first want to give people a little bit of more info about you, your history with dogs, who your therapy dog is?
Yes. Okay. My history with dogs is that I didn't grow up with dogs at all. And my first dog, I thought, I was living by myself as a young female in my 20s, and I thought, oh, I felt insecure, so I wanted to get a dog as a guard dog. And so I ended up with my first German Shepherd. And we went along to the German Shepherd Dog Club in Darwin, and that was my first experience of dog training. And then after that, I've since had two more Shepherds, German Shepherds. And when our last Shepherd went to heaven, still hurts to even think about it, my husband and I hadn't been talking for a while about, you know, next time why don't we do something different? And particularly with the work that I do, you know, friends of ours had dogs that are used as therapy dogs, and we thought we'd go down that line. So I started researching and came up with this Australian copper dog breed. And so we got our first copper dog puppy, and the biggest shock for me was the temperament of this little guy. He is incredibly sensitive, which gives him that ability to, I suppose, empathise with people and connect with people, whereas my shepherds are just so tough and strong and big smooches, but just all about the being tough, you know. Yeah. The last one that we had was such a wolf. He was quite clumsy, and I've never known such a clumsy dog, to be honest. And he would just run straight into really hard things like a pillar or, and he would, just wouldn't even flinch. He'd just kind of go like that, and off he'd go again. And little guy, he is so, so sensitive. You know, I remember ringing the vet when he got desexed, and couldn't believe it. Like the carry on. Like the shepherds that I've had, they just, you know, they might be a bit tender for a day, but they used to worry about it. And so the little guy was flat on his back with his legs apart for a week. He had to hand feed him.
That's ridiculous.
I rang up the vet and I said, look, I think it's a bit of a sook, but I'm just checking that there's not something clinical going on. And he said, well, has he got a temperature? No. Is he appears sick? No. He's, you know, otherwise bright as a button, but just on the floor wailing. And
bless him.
He said, anything with poodle in it is very, very sensitive. So bless. How did you understand this dog is an entirely different type of dog, and he's very, very soft. Yeah. And very, very smart. Yeah. So that's my dog experience. So now he's two. We've done the clinical Therapy Dogs Australia course, and he was a learner for a while because he was still managing his excitability around people, because he loves people so much, but he loves them too much. And, you know, had to develop some impulse control around his excitement when he meets people. And, yeah, so he's been working through all of that. So he was a learner for, I don't know, was it about 8 months or 6 months or something, Sam? Something like that. And then we did a reassessment. I can't remember anyway. New temperament assessment. And he passed. And I didn't realise that we were still, like, that we were able to, because he passed his obedience side, but I didn't realise that was the only thing stopping him from becoming a fully fledged therapy dog. And when I got the email, I was so happy, so excited. But, oh, I thought we'd have to wait another, you know, another several months and go through the whole thing again. But no, you're very kind, Sam. So anyway, so then he got his real bandana. It's fully therapy dog. So, yeah, and we've been going into school ever since. And honestly, he just loves it so much. I don't tell people this because I fear they won't believe me, but when I put on his bandana, I only go to school Thursdays and Fridays. When I put on his bandana, he stands up in a different posture and
bless.
He bends his neck to me so that I can put on his lead, and he looks at me like, let's go, let's do this. I'm not imagining this, but he knows when I put on his bandana, we're going to work. And he loves it, he absolutely loves it. Yeah, it's really amazing, you know.
Bless him. So it was 6 months between, yeah, 6 months between he got when he did his learners and then he did your next temperament assessment. And, yeah, exactly what you described. So we just wanted to see that he was going to be just that little bit extra time to mature, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. So little Benny's had quite a journey and he loves his job. You work in a school, a primary school, and you run programs there and everybody loves him.
They do, yeah. they do. You just, I don't know, it's just magical to watch, really. And the teachers, they come down to visit him when they're on their breaks. And then they'll give him a cuddle and say hi, and then they'll say hello to me.
Like, it's always, oh, the way. Hi.
Just came to see Benny, but hi to you too. And I love that. I just love that. Yeah. And he is progressing and growing. Like, I know it's very early in his therapy dog career, but on Friday, he actually achieved something just so remarkable. But I'm not sure if there's time to talk about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone will want to hear about that.
Okay. So I was invited to go with him to a group of four little preppies that are not school ready yet, at an age where they don't want to tell them to stay home.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when they're really young, they can say to folks, to parents, you know, just give them another year, you know, yeah, with mum or kindy or whatever. But these little ones, excuse me, for whatever reason, are just not quite school ready. And things like transitioning between even zones within a classroom, you know, reading zone to number zone or whatever, not being able to walk in a line with other children, not being able to hear teachers' instructions because they're so distracted, not being able to pick up a pencil and flip it so you've got your grip, not being able to, you know, if you can't pick up a pencil, then you can't, you know, do any kind of pre-writing. So these kinds of things, listening and sitting nicely to tape at a desk. So anyway, so we're invited to go down and see, you know, if it would help, if Benny would help. So these two little ones, there was only two that day because two had been left in their classrooms because they actually were engaged. So I can't teach them how to be engaged if they're doing it, you know, we want success. So there's just the two that day. And these two, it's interesting because there's two in the group that are very sociable and there's two in the group that are very introverted. So they're very, very different personalities. Anyway, so they were sitting there at their little table and the teacher's got his little mock area set up and where they've got to, you know, look at the board and watch a few little videos and things like that. Anyway, so Benny, I got him to sit on his chair at his desk next to them. And when they were all wriggly, because he sits so nicely, he just loves it. And they were all wriggly, I go, oh, can you just sit nicely like Benny? Oh, and they were sitting up nicely like Benny. And it was just magical. I know. And then they were doing some other writing task and I thought he needs a break from sitting on this chair posing because he'll be getting tired. So I got him down onto the floor and brought him round to the front, sort of next to where the teacher was. We're just on the floor there and he's, of course, he's such a clown. He's got his head under the desk looking up at the like, hello, you know, so lots and lots of laughter and then, you know, nuzzling their little legs and their feet and all this kind of thing. And then another one came in who comes to school later and she joined in and she has been completely nonverbal in class. And very low emotional expression, just nothing except this really troubled look, almost like a warning, you know, so shut down.
Oh, dear.
And she sat at her little table and she turned her back, almost like the dogs do when they're trying to reduce stimulation, and she looked at the back wall. And she's sitting there with a little baby looking at the back wall. Just broke my heart.
Yeah.
My poor little darling. So then Benny, who's sitting at the front, I moved him over in front of her, and so of course he sticks his head under the desk and he's, you know, rubbing his lovely soft fur on her little legs, and she was starting to kind of get engaged with that interaction and curious. And anyway, then the other little girls started getting jealous, so the one next to us said, what's Benny doing over there? Oh, he's just giving some love to our new little friend who's just come in. But Benny loves me. And then the next one said, and he loves me too.
Oh.
Benny needs to come back and love us more. Benny's got enough love for all of you that we have to take our turns. So it was really good because turn taking is another skill that they need to master. So
yeah.
I think this is working really, really well and fitting in really, really well. Anyway, then it was time to pick up their long, sparkly things and flip it and do their writing. And this little girl didn't want a bar of it. She just sat there just staring straight ahead. But at least she was facing forward.
Mm. Yeah.
So the teacher just very discreetly got a fidget toy and just put it on her desk and was helping the others. And she just didn't want a bar of it. And then I said to Benny, I just sort of, like, he reads my every movement and he knows what I'm thinking. And I just sort of gestured towards the toy and he touched it with his nose. So she picked it up and she was completely disengaged from it. And then she started to play with it. And then I could see this little tiny little smile happening. And then, of course, these two started fighting over him again. She's engaged with her little toy and she's kind of, I thought, this is going to be distracting. So I thought, I'll just move him away. We went and sat probably 4 metres away on this big rug and cushions. And I thought, he can do it with a little breather as well. So we're just sitting there doing some deep breathing together, me and Benny. And this one, the third one, got up and came over to us. And she put her hand on my shoulder and leaned over me and started patting him and she started talking and she said,
wow,
he's so soft. Isn't he soft? He likes me. And and the teacher and the assistant that were there, the looks on their faces and the look on my face too was just absolute shock.
Wow.
And afterwards I was thinking about it and I thought, it's, he took all of her cortisol away.
Mm.
She could just feel safe. And then she could be a kid. And then what was even more remarkable was after giving him a little pat and having a little chat with me, she got up and she went back to her desk and she picked up the, I don't know what you call those things, they're sparkly and they've got oil and sparkles inside and they're shaped like a pen. But anyway, so she picked it up and she started, you know, trying to do it. Like they had to trace the curves, the little bee's got to go to its little hive, you know, it's free writing stuff.
Wow.
And just sat there and just focused. And so I brought Benny back and he sat next to her just quietly on the floor while she did that. And it was just miraculous. And both the teachers said, we're going to write this up and put it on one school, which is the format at school where they put in information about the challenges. And that blew me away. And I thought, well, he's really growing into this role. And, like, I've seen him do incredible things before when kids come and do school refusal. And, you know, they're hanging on to mum and they won't let go. And I asked them, would you like to come and read Benny a story with me? And it's just suddenly, oh, bye, mum. And I'm going with Benny. And to me, that's a miracle. That is me.
Yeah. To everyone, all of the principal, the deputy, everyone who's involved with trying to help that kid transition, because it can take hours if be successful at all. And it's horrible for everybody involved.
Yeah.
But the dogs, they can just, help that transition makes everything so much easier for everybody and so much less horrible for the child.
Yeah. So I don't know whether she's going to need a little dose of Benny every day to be able to calm down. But anyway, then it was morning tea time and we all went out into the playground because she said, because the other social worker was there, said, oh, you know, it's morning tea time, let's go, we'll walk out with you. And she looked at Benny and she said, no. And I said, Benny can come too. So we all went out, sat in the playground. And she just stuck by us for a while because she didn't really know what to do. But then she eventually wandered off over to the other two and was just kind of paralleling with them as they played. I thought, well, that's amazing.
That's great.
Yeah. So I think, you know, when he gets more experience under his belt, he's going to be able to do more of that kind of thing because I think he really is starting to understand his job.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a natural, you know, and then you're also just like letting him, you're letting opportunities happen as well, you know, like seeing, just even just taking him over towards that child just see what he does, you know. And a lot of the time the dogs will have that intuition because we've taught them that you can do whatever you want. I'll just tell you if you do something that is off limits. And so that's why it's so important that we train the dogs that way, because then they still have initiation. They can still initiate. They feel safe and confident to just try stuff. And because we're just going to let them know if that's like, oh, that's not something that we can do right now. So I think that's really cool because he, like you said, like dropping her cortisol, giving her something to focus on, a little bit of motivation, and can see how just reducing that stuff a little bit, it reduced a barrier to engagement. And that's so much faster than all the interactions that we try and do with little kids like that, like trying to engage and maybe play a game or whatever it might be. There's still so much pressure coming from us. Like they can still feel all of the pressure that we're like, okay, well, we need to try and get you comfortable, you know, whereas when the dog does it, it just seems like it's just so natural. And yeah, we see a lot more success.
Thinking about that, you know, the whole energy reading ability that they've got. And like when I'm at school with kids, and with him too, because I'm trying to manage him and making sure that he stays on top of his emotions. I'm still very much in a cognitive realm as well as kind of play realm, like with the children. And that I'm sure giving off that energy of I'm the adult in the room. And
yeah,
you know, and I think that energy must get complicated, and kids can sense it, like they're so sensitive energy like that. And
yeah.
But his energy is so uncomplicated. He's just got that inbuilt goofiness and that big kind of crazy smile. And he's just so ridiculous looking. And they look at him and they just start laughing straight away.
Poor Benny.
And he does things to make people laugh. And he does it on purpose. I know he does.
Yeah.
When people are, they're really concentrating really hard, their children, on trying to do the crochet, next thing, boing, he's right up on the table. He has a look at what everyone's doing and the whole table will collapse in laughter. And he's like, look at me, you know. And I just think secretly, like, he's this little party animal who's just, if things are too quiet and serious, he's like, let's get the party. I really think that.
That's perfect.
And I'm noticing too that, like, he and I are so in tune now. He reads me and I read him and he's always checking in with me. My husband is getting into trouble for his tone being too strong. You don't need to be that strong with him. That's too harsh. He said, but he's got to know that that's not what I want. I said, yeah, but that tone was really way too strong, you know, he doesn't need that. And I didn't say it, but I felt like saying, you hurt his feelings.
It's hard to get used to really modulating your tone. It's tricky, and I think especially for men because they've got that deeper tone anyway. Yeah. Whereas women, we're probably quite used to being like quite a bit higher, but can certainly get a growl happening if we need to. So,
yeah. And I believe I've got a really long way to go with that. But just the fact that I'm pulling the husband up for his tones in different situations makes me realise maybe I am growing in this and being more aware, listening more in tones. Yeah, so it's very a bit good. Of a learning curve for both of us, and I just love it so much. It's so much fun. Yeah.
I might just mention as well that you've come over to the Pat Stewart side as well. You've been in Pat's school, hanging out in there.
My goodness, although his IQ is so off the chart and mine's not, and it takes me a while to digest every bit.
So I've much content.
So it's a very content rich.
Yeah.
And there's a lot content dense as well.
Yeah.
To be able to think about it and then apply it, it's just a lot. There's a lifetime's worth of help in that course. And I just wish that I'd discovered Kat years ago.
Yeah.
Kat, big shout out to Kat.
Thank you, Pat.
Love you, Pat.
We love you, Pat. I like that you told us that story because I think, you know, it's a nice illustration for people of, you know, the types of work that the dogs are doing. Reason that we were chatting is because you reached out because there was something going down at the school that we thought, that's not quite in line with what you had learned so far about, you know, therapy dogs and therapy dog handling. So with sensitivity in mind, do you want to give us just a bit of a rundown on what we can sort of say about the situation?
Yeah. As a school chaplain, I can bring in, I guess it's community development. So I can bring in, not try and do everything myself, but bring in expertise from other areas. So I think elderly people are an amazing resource and underutilized. And so I started a grandparent program because there are children at school that, for example, there are young little boys that don't have a father or a grandfather.
Yeah.
And no significant male role models in their life.
Yeah.
So to have someone to volunteer to come in and just be with that child, spend time with them and just do whatever they want to do, read a book or just hang out or kick a footy around or hit a basketball. It's so cute. my grandpa going around with these two little boys, they love bugs. So I've got some, what do you call those things with the
like magnifying glass?
Yeah, magnifying glass.
Oh, and yeah.
Said to the grandpa, do not burn ants with it. Don't teach them. like what my father would have done anyway. So, and my brothers, oh, golly, things they did with magnifying glasses. Anyway, so they went around the school looking at bugs in the kitchen garden and went to bugs. And they went to the library because these little boys can't read. So I went to the library and found books with pictures of bugs and looked them all up. And the grandpa said to me afterwards, did you know that grasshoppers have eyes on their elbows? I'm like, no.
I
absolutely love being at school in such a learning-rich environment because I'm always learning stuff that's really super cool. And you could probably use that at a trivia night one night, you know, but just
really
interesting and inspiring. And so, but that's early reading for these children and really exciting. And someone that just actually by their actions says to the child, I see you and you mean something, you're important. And you're really cool and I do spending time with you. And that's, for me, is such a powerful mentoring opportunity.
And it's hard for families, even when there are lots of family, it's hard for families to find time for that too, where it's just, we're not doing anything except just following you around, you know, it's hard in this day and age. So it's really nice.
Oh, I love it. I know it's so exciting. The difficulty is recruiting more grandpas because retired men are actually really busy. And I've asked about three or four that have actually said, I love it, I want to do it, but I can't right now because I'm doing that and doing this and doing that. You know, men shared and all sorts of other stuff. And it's like, okay, that's really cool to hear. But I've just recently recruited another one. And he was really into basketball. So that's working really, really well. And I've also got two grandmas that come along and they have retaught me how to crochet. So now there's three of us that say Friday first lunchtime I have a crochet and knitting group. And children can come and they're referred also by the leadership team who love the grandparent program. And these children they're amazing and it's really helping them those developmental relationships of, you know, mentoring each other as they learn this skill. New ones come in and they'll like just organically say, oh, I can show you how to start it off. And they're helping each other and then their self-esteem is growing and they're having fun, you know, going up to grandma's, and one little girl, she's so good at crocheting, but she'll go up to grandma to say, I think I made a mistake. Can you please check it for me? You know, just to have that bit of grandma love. It's so beautiful. Mm. Oh, my goodness. It just fills my heart. It really does. So, yeah. So, anyway, so basically what happened was one of my grandpas went down to the room where it's like an escape room for children.
Hang on. Have you ever done an escape room, Christine?
No, but I've heard
so we them. Lock them in there, and there's some codes, and if they can figure out the codes, they can get out.
Kind of escape room, but not too far off. In an education kind of setting, what I mean is it's a room that they can escape from feeling overwhelmed in their class.
Yeah, like a break room.
Break room, yes.
Yeah.
And some of them will spend most of each day there. There are two therapy dogs in that room, and they are trained by a different organisation. And as far as I understand, the handler and main teacher in that area trained in a way that's different to the way that therapy dogs trains. And I don't believe they were trained as a team. I believe the dogs were purchased, already trained, and then brought to school. They're brought to school each day. Whereas we give our dogs 24 hours break in between working. They're there all day, and the children can access them whenever they want. To be fair, they do have crates there, and I have noticed them independently going over and putting themselves in a crate when they wanted a little break. However, the crate door's not closed, so children can still access them, and I have seen that. So that's kind of the arena. Anyway, this grandpa.
And there was one that was a bit older, and then one that was a bit younger?
Yes. Yep. And the newer one has been brought in because one has recently retired. So another one's been brought in. This one, I noticed, doesn't have the obedience that the former one did. For example, will do a runner if he's off lead, and I don't have anything to do with them really, apart from I used to help groups in that room. But I don't anymore because I think that little cohort isn't that suited to group work. I think they're better one-on-one because they're all at such different levels and with different needs. So we try.
So the kids in that room are generally like quite vulnerable. So they've got different stuff going on. So it might be neurodivergent or some other kind of disability, or there's trauma, like they're the kind of higher risk, higher needs, higher support needs group that's in there. Is that the case?
Very much so. Very much so. And these children will go further. Like if they get trigger stacked to the point where they're not coping, they'll actually attack me. You know, not just for the desk or, you know, the displacement will turn into assault of teachers or, you know, of each other. And so it can be quite a volatile space. And depending
on... for anyone that didn't hear that, probably because you broke up just as you were saying that, it's quite a volatile at times group of little people. So can get very overwhelmed with their big feelings, and it's not unusual for them to lash out. So whether they're throwing things or hitting people, could be hitting teachers, trying to hit their other students, things like that. So it's quite a volatile at times environment, which is why the environment exists, is to try and give those kids a space to cool down and have a break and reset and regulate and all those things. Yes. And that's where these dogs are. Yeah.
So anyway, one of my grandpas came along, and the usual thing is he goes down to this room, collects his two little charges, and they go off for their adventures for the hour. This day he came in, and the younger dog actually was very reactive to him, lunged at him, was full on barking, it was posturing, you know, the bristles up, and barking very loudly, bearing some equipment. the grandpa was a little bit surprised and kind of knows a little bit about dogs, and just went and sat down quietly and didn't look at the dog. And the teacher spoke to the dog and came over and apologised profusely. This all happened sort of in the room with the kids, so they were all mm-hmm. with kids as well. Apologised profusely, explained that a male had stayed in her house over Christmas and upset the dogs in some way, and since then the dog has been very reactive to all men, men only. And after it had calmed down, it was okay. And the grandpa told me about this and said to me, look, it's okay. I don't want it reported. Like, it's not a big deal. And anyway, I kind of ruminated over that. So that was a Friday, ruminated over that over the weekend, and had this increasing storm in my chest about, oh my goodness, that dog must be so trigger-stacked to the point where it's actually seeing a threat and barking. And like you've explained in the podcast, that's a distancing creating mm-hmm. behavior. It's like, I don't want you anywhere near me. And I just thought, I can't sit with this, because they're not people that you can kind of talk to and reason with. They're dogs, and these, and I know the context in which these dogs work. They're not getting those breaks. They're not getting that mutually beneficial arrangement that we strive so hard to ensure in the team. You know, that yeah. the dog's got to be really getting a lot out of this and be really, really happy. And so I rang Sam. And I sent an email to say, oh, actually I need some help, please, about an issue. And then you guys contacted me. We talked on the phone. Yeah. So
yes.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened. The first chapter.
So the hard thing is, so what we have is a couple of things to consider, because your initial thing might be like, oh, well, that's not on. But because you're in a workplace where you, and like there are many stories like this where people are in workplaces where they've got their Therapy Dogs Australia dog and there's another dog there that's either not had any training or it's been trained somewhere else, and the behaviours are just poor. Like, and it's, you know, or the dog stresses, they're stressed there or whatever. And I do see issues when handlers haven't been trained. So our big thing is about training the handlers to recognize those things and know how to work a dog, but also have a support system too, so that when something doesn't go well or something pops up, then they can come back and go, oh, I need help with XYZ. And our recommendation would always be, don't take the dog to work. Let's have a look at it. Let's sort it out and make sure that it's all going to be good, and then look at reintegrating them back into the work job, into the work role again. But when you work in a setting like a school or any kind of group workplace, and there's another person there with their dog, and you believe that it's behaving in a way that isn't safe for the dog and or the student, and or like our concern as well became around therapy dogs in the school. So what we don't want is for a dog to cause a problem, and then now so whoever's in charge, whether it's the principal or the manager of wherever, we've seen this before too, where they just put their foot down and say, no more dogs, like, no more dogs, we're just not having this happening. That is a problem then for everyone. It disadvantages everybody. And that's why I'm glad you told us that story at the beginning, because it really does, we care about getting access for it for your dog, you know, because Benny's great and he's suited to the job. And, you know, what are we going to do? How do we manage this so that Benny can keep his job? But also, this is a colleague as well. So we don't want to upset anybody. You know, we want to handle things in a way that's sensitive, but also, you know, it was a struggle for you because the grandpa was like, I don't want it brought up, because he was the person that it happened to. So there's also going to be the issue that he's obviously dobbed on her to you. And then now, you know, that's just tricky too, because they've got to cross paths and be in the workplace together and things like that. So that's where we kind of got like, what do I do now? Because I have a feeling that this dog, it's not good, and it's going to get worse. And that's why we've discussed as well the environment that the dog is in, which is not an easy one. Like, that's tough for dogs, that kind of setting with that client demographic and that number of hours and et cetera. The other thing, that dog's an adolescent as well, so still in its adolescent time, which means that it's quite formative in this time, and adolescent dogs can have bumps along the way. So one of the things that we're considering too is like, well, if they just keep going and try and go through this at the school, you're almost certainly going to get worse and this dog won't have a career. But if it gets dealt with outside of the school with a professional, then there's every chance that the dog can get through this and then, you know, be reintegrated down the track. So talk us through, like, for you, what decision did you make? What did you consider? What action did you take?
Well, it was, I had a bit of cognitive dissonance about what to do, really, because as a school chaplain, I'm there to support everybody. That's my role. It's just provide emotional, social, educational support across the whole school setting. Mm. Everybody's cheerleader. You know, I'm not there to rattle cages or criticize people. It's not my role. I'm there to build people up. So that was really difficult for me. Also, the fact that I'm the new kid on the block with a new therapy dog. He's a young dog. I'm a new trainer. I've only been doing this for, you know, not even a year, is it? And this person has had these dogs in school settings for years, did her training a long time ago. And as far as I know, that training hasn't been upgraded annually like we do ours. But I don't know that for sure, but I'm fairly confident in that. So basically, I just didn't know what to do. So after talking,
we also didn't really know who the dogs were through. Hey, like, because I was doing some Googling, and it wasn't clear who the dogs came from, because that could have been another pathway for us as well, is to go to them. Like how we've got a reporting button on our page, which I did get a spicy report last week that I have to deal with this week. Not one of our dogs. So that button on our website is being used by people. It's obviously a need in the industry because people are using it to report dogs and people that we don't even know. So, but I am going to have to track them down and speak to them in some form because of exactly what we're about to discuss. So we didn't know who the training organisation was just off the bat. It's like they wear coats or something that are that. Like all of our coats and bandanas have Therapy Dogs Australia on them. So if your dogs play up, don't take this, guys, as a reason to not put your coats and bandanas on. But accountability-wise, people should be able to track down.
Thanks, man. Yeah. No disguise.
Yeah. Just put another company's logo on the dogs and let them do whatever they want.
Yeah. So anyway, so when I spoke to you, I think you asked some questions. And that is, has this been reported to your school? Is the dog participating in any further training program? And have you spoken to the handler? And knowing the way that schools work, well, my particular school is quite hierarchical. And
yeah, schools are.
Any issue like this, they like, in the first instance, for you to go to the principal or your line manager in the leadership team and discuss it with them and figure out a plan of management. And I guess in schools, like, the accountability is just so high because they're children. So, and I'm all about kids first and safety with children, particularly when, you know, in our training we saw photos of a child's face that's been bitten by a dog. You just do not want to see that ever again. Even a small dog has got some pretty, you know, useful equipment for damage if it needs it to protect itself. So,
and these dogs, these were like medium to large breed, so they were like, but they'd probably be about 30 kilos.
And their head is right at the child's face level. These are small kids, you know, 7 years old. So I just, anyway, so my My philosophy is always, if I have a problem with a person, to go to that person, not to involve anybody else, but to go to that person and talk to them about it. So that was my thinking, I don't want to go straight to my line manager with this. This can be something that can be made smaller and fixed, and it might be in that process, I don't know, but it warrants a conversation. And being the new kid on the block with the therapy dog, I don't want to go and tell people how to do therapy dog when they've been doing it for a long time. That's not going to be well received. So I sort of thought, this is going to be really tricky, and it really will take quite a bit of humility and, you know, getting alongside and a pastoral care, I suppose. And anyway, so.
Well, we had discussed that we can help them. Like, so we had discussed that if you want to go and reach out and just find out, because there was a story to it that kind of felt a little bit bad for her as well, because there was a bit of a story to, like, what has gone on with the dog. So we had that empathy and compassion.
Her vulnerability.
Exactly.
As a human and what she was going through. And she loves those dogs and she loves those children. And
we wanted to help. So we wanted to be able to go, you know, hey, have you discussed this with your training organization? And or if not, like, my training organization can help you. So let's, like, just give you this information. And, like, even if we weren't suitable or whatever, like, we know plenty of trainers that can deal with this kind of, and this kind of issue doesn't have to be a big deal, is kind of the thing as well. Like the growling episode that we did, this stuff doesn't have to be a big deal, but if it gets left unchecked, it will become a massive deal. So we discussed that too, that, like, you can go and approach it and sort of just, let's collaborate, like, how can I support you kind of thing. Because she did say to the grandpa, like, she acknowledged it. Like, she was like, she knew it wasn't good. She thinks she kind of knew where it came from. That was kind of where it was at. So what'd you do?
So I approached her and found a moment one morning before school, and she was very, very defensive, like, what do you want to talk to me for? And I just made sure I sat down. She stayed standing up, and I could see by her body language she was quite stressed, probably busy with a million things on her mind, as teachers are before school, getting ready for class and everything. And I just said to her, I'll only take a moment. I just wanted to ask you about this incident with the grandpa, and has it been reported? Is there a training plan in place? This, and her answers were no, and why would I need to do that? And became quite defensive, and I just reaffirmed to her that, you know, I'm on her side, I'm on your side. This is something that could potentially get bigger than it needs to get and threaten the whole therapy dog programs. We might end up with all of our dogs not able to come to school. And also, I don't want to lose my grandpas. It's really hard to get a grandpa. I can't be traumatizing my grandpas. So the response was basically to push back, reject the suggestions, to become quite angry at me and defensive and storm out, basically, and dismiss the need for anything to happen.
Which is how we thought it was going to go. But you were very brave. I was very impressed.
Oh, thank you.
But I would have, like, sent a text being like, lol, dog emoji, bark emoji.
Yeah, it might have been better. Thank you, Mike.
What the helly, dog emoji, explosion emoji, poo emoji.
Sad grandpa emoji.
Meaning that, yeah, grandpa emoji.
Grandpa running for the hill. So anyway, so that's what happened. And then I was also considering, okay, now I think it's time to approach my line manager. Am I going to be reprimanded for not bringing it to her in the first instance? So I'm in two minds about that. You know, I always think it's good to go to the person themselves and talk it through if there's an issue. And also, my line manager, like she's middle management, she's deputy principal, she's smashed. Everyone dumps everything on her to do. And, you know, and that's the way the school is set up. But I was always brought up to take initiative and try and resolve things yourself before you ask for help.
And you were always going to report it anyway, but the idea was to offer the other handler some support before, like, let me go with you or let me connect you with someone to even like help her at, because it was getting reported. Like this is the thing, that dog left unchecked.
The order in which it was done was what was going through my head.
Exactly. There was no question that it was getting reported because that dog's going to bite someone eventually. And if it's a child, that is a huge tragedy. But that it could, even if it bites anybody, do you know what I mean? Or it's also scary for kids to see that sort of stuff. So we knew it was getting reported, but it was about reaching out and going, hey, I can support you. I can be an ally with you through this process. Rather than just kind of dobbing on her and being like, get rid of her dogs. Mine can be the only dog. Do you know what I mean? So it was always going to be reported. But, yeah, how did your line manager respond? Did you get in trouble?
No, not at all. And it's the only time that I've had a meeting with her and she's been completely silent and looking very, very serious.
That would scare me.
Yes, it scared me.
Because oh, my God.
We have these lovely conversations where everyone's happy and that's my jam. I just want everyone to be happy in the world and the world to be a perfect place, and it's not. And anyway, so we have these lovely meetings and talk about programs and really great stuff, but to actually go to her with a very serious issue involving another staff member, she took it extremely seriously and requested that I write it all down. And I'm always very wary about putting things in writing about people because, you know, you don't know where that information will end up or get changed or, you know, anyway. So I actually wrote it as an incident report and I thought, well, that denotes the seriousness of it. And I tried to just do dot point of facts, you know, on this day, this date, this time, this grandpa reported to me that this happened. And I had a conversation on this date at this time with the dog handler and asked ABC. Dog handler stated to me what they stated, blah, 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 and walked out of the room. And then I wrote a little bit of information about my concern is that this behaviour could generalise to other people, not just men, and can't remember exactly what else I said, but just my.
Well, one of them would have been the kids witnessing it too, because I know that was a big part of it as well. That they're supposed to be in a safe space, and it is scary when dogs bark like that. Like it wasn't like woof woof, what's that sound? It was like get out of here, grr. Like it was very forward. And like you said, like you've had German Shepherds in the past, so you know what it looks like when a dog's forward. Like it's like, whoop, okay, like that's, you're supposed to stop opening someone's front gate when that happens.
That's right. And, yeah, so anyway, so I wrote that up and gave it to my line manager, and then the following week I didn't hear anything because I'm only there Thursday, Fridays, and I thought, well, I'm just going to keep my head down because I'm feeling awful. And I think I said to you, sometimes doing the right thing really feels like doing the wrong thing. That was such a stressful process for me. I felt awful, you know, like reporting on this poor woman who's, yeah, I just felt awful. And I thought, it's going to damage the relationship too. Like she's not going to trust the chaplain, someone that I can come and talk to if I've got a problem, or, you know, but the kids come first and safety comes first, and we don't want to lose our therapy dogs program. And exactly what you said, my line manager actually said to me at the end of our discussion, we may need to stop all of the therapy dogs coming to school because of the risk. And I just thought, no. And I said to her, the other two therapy dogs are doing a good job. The other therapy dog in that room is doing a good job. My little therapy dog is doing a good job. And this is an issue that can be fixed. It's early in the dog's career and it can be sorted out and the dog can potentially help a lot of people. So I kind of left her with that. And so we ended on a positive note, I guess. But anyway, then I didn't hear anything the following week. And so I just kept my head down and stayed right out of everything and just did my job. And the grandpa in question reported to me that he was told by the front office when he signed in that the children would be brought up to the office as new protocol. So that, I mean, there's often a communication lag in schools. I find they have, they've got to prioritise the most important things. So that was something they just got the front office to do rather than tell me and then I tell my grandpa. So, like, that's all right. That's just an organisational thing. But then when the grandpa...
So they were obviously avoiding having the men approaching that room. So they've decided we'll take the kids out of the room, up to the office, avoid that.
And I was told, the grandpa was told, at the end of the session, bring them back to the office and someone will take them back to the room where the dogs are. So, okay, so that happened, except there was no one available to take the children back. So grandpa just walked the children back but didn't go into the room, just stood there and watched them go in. So that was fine. But when the door was open, he noticed there was only one dog there. So the other dog wasn't there that day. So I thought, okay, well, that's an indicator that, you know, perhaps there's been some change put in place. Anyway, so then the week after that, so we're talking 2 weeks after my incident report, my line manager actually walked past an incident, which was doing something else, and incidentally said, oh, you know, we need to have a chat and catch up about a few things. And I thought, oh, that was so serious tone. But I thought, okay. So I went and she basically said, we've met with the handler and the principal and the dog, we've done a complete new risk assessment for this dog. The dog is, we're insisting on a retraining program and but the dog will remain at school for now, but the grandpas will just not go into the room. And we'll stop men going to the room, but the dog can stay for now. So, you know, when I texted that back to you and you said, that's a great outcome, I was a little bit disappointed that the dog was going to remain at school, but they are mitigating the risk by making sure no men go in there. So, you know, So anyway, like you said, a very positive outcome and I just felt awful about it, that's all. Didn't feel nice, but it had to be done, So that was that
one. It's a good outcome because it's opened the eyes to the school. So there are a couple of things at play. Your own duty of care. So that's one thing that you and I discussed is that so you know now because you're a therapy dog handler, you've been trained as a therapy dog handler, you do know about the risk of that dog. So your duty of care is to report it because if you don't report it and then something happens, you can wear some of the blame of that because you do, it's not like someone else that's just walking along and sees the dog bark and they don't know anything about dogs and they just go, oh, the dog's barking. Like, or, you know, they've got pet dogs and their dogs bark at stuff all the time. So like, oh, what if the dog's barking? God, whatever, he doesn't like that guy. We actually know like, oh, actually though, like you mentioned briefly before, the trigger stacking that's going on, which, you know, like that environment that the dog's in, it is a stressful environment. There's going to be new and different things happening every day. And then grandpa walks in and that just sends the dog over threshold. But it could be anything that sends that dog over threshold at any time. So you've got to report it. What is good about the outcome is that the school took it seriously and they discussed it and they've decided this dog needs more training. We all would prefer that the dog wasn't there during this time. But that's something that's out of your hands and it's out of my hands. Like it's not our decision as to whether or not. So the reason I would like for the dog to not be there is because when those kinds of things, first of all, controlling the level of trigger stacking in that environment is hard. So the kids that come in are just being who they are and they're just doing what they do on that day. So that's really hard to keep track of and manage just how much goes on in one day for the dog. And I already know that that dog has got a limit that they're going to get to. So we've found the limit and now we know that it exists. And so we've got to be really careful managing that. I would definitely not want to be overdoing it with that dog. Very hard to manage in that setting. As soon as the dog, that handler, particular handler, doesn't know how to handle that dog in that situation, we've seen that. So that handler needs time and a trainer to show her how, help her fully understand what's going on with the dog and show her how to, one, avoid these situations, and two, how to handle it if it does happen, because sometimes things just happen. So I don't know how, like, that takes time for a handler to learn that. We don't know who the training organization is, that we don't know when they've said retraining, we don't know where they're going or what they're doing about that. Hopefully the school does some due diligence around that, and that imagine that would be really hard for them to do because they're not experts in the area. So the trainer that gets chosen now as well could make or break the future for that dog as well. So that's a tricky thing. But yeah, the handler needs time to learn how to avoid and then manage those situations so that it doesn't get worse. The dog's not successful in that behavior, and that we need to change the way that the dog is feeling about stuff. So that all takes time. So I would much prefer that the dog wasn't there continuing to have a busy job and also try to navigate all that stuff for themselves during their adolescence. But they did the risk assessment. They're not having the grandpas go down there. That's fine for right now. But like we talked about, I think it's going to generalize to other people anyway. And if that dog starts acting protectively of that room, they're going to be in trouble, which is what can happen as well. So good outcome, not what we would have prescribed, hey, when we discussed it, not what we would have prescribed, but still.
I think it reduced my stress. Reporting it really reduced my stress because the sense of responsibility of knowing this information and what that behavior is just before a bite. And there's already a child that accesses that room that has had a serious injury to his little face from
a dog bite.
A dog bite.
Yeah.
And carries the scar. Thankfully, that little fellow wasn't in there at that time on that day. So the sense of relief of reporting it, even though it was a very uncomfortable process, I just felt so relieved because I don't have to carry this now. It's the school's job to carry this and to follow through on this. And if there's an incident, and I hope that there's not, where the dog, you know, takes that next step and hurts somebody, at least I've done my part and I've tried, I've said, you know, I brought it to their attention, and that's just taken a huge stress off me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of, like, there were your podcast about self-care, I haven't watched all of it, but how we've got to self-care as handlers as well. But I've just come up with an idea. I think there should be a cruise for therapy dog handlers and their teams. You could send the dog. This dog needs a cruise. Like,
that'd be amazing.
I know, right? And you could have like a swimming pool.
I think someone did that a few years ago, and it was like a dog training conventional on a cruise. You guys will have to Google it, but yeah, that's ringing a bell. But that would be amazing.
Yeah, I think this dog needs a cruise.
Needs a little holiday.
Yeah, there's not many people around and it can just lie on a beach and sniff.
Exactly. So one of the things that pops up in these situations that you briefly touched on before is that, you know, worrying that your role is as the chaplain is that people can come to you and trust you and things like that. And we wanted to be supportive and offer some support, but also that support, including I will support you as we report this. I just want to make sure that people out there that might be listening going, oh, like I do know of something that's going on in my situation that I can see there's red flags. Trying to align yourself with the person, that's not something that you have to do, but it can be nice if you're that kind of person where, you know, it can be nice to go, okay, well, just I want to offer some kind of compassion and support throughout this process as well. And even though there's a bit of like potential, there's a potential for the relationship breakdown, what we hope is that in hindsight, that that person learns that they actually can trust you even more than what they thought before, because you're going to act protectively of them and their dog, which is ultimately what's happening, is that you're acting protectively of them and their students and their dog. And that's kind of the role. It's like a parent role. It's kind of the role that you're in at that point in time where it's like, well, I know that you're not going to like this, but this is what needs to happen to keep you and everybody safe. Yeah, it's tough. And then, and some people, they may never see that in high school. It's kind of like when your kids grow up and they're adults and they realize there was a reason that you did all that stuff when they were little. And even though at the time they were like, oh, this sucks. Like, just let me do whatever. And you're like, you know, putting things in place for them that they'll appreciate down the track. I think this could be a situation like that too. And if it's not appreciated, that's also out of our control, but I do think it's a possibility that at some point down the line, it's something that certainly the line manager, I think, and is going to go, okay, well, Christine is acting responsibly and is taking the behavior and safety of the dogs seriously. Maybe we don't have to cancel the whole program. Well, they didn't even cancel that dog, but yeah.
That should explain to me when I told you about that response and you said, if they cancel the therapy dog program, I will make it my personal mission to make everyone who's involved life a misery.
I did say that. I was not impressed. I was like, I will make everybody miserable if that is what happens. I will find out exactly who is responsible for that and I will be making them miserable. I was very bought in by this stage, guys. I was bought in. Christine's texted me a bit. She texted me all these updates. I'm like, I was right in. I was in there.
But humour just helps so much in any situation. It just made me laugh so much.
Yes, because I was joking. Laughing at my funny joke. Yes. But that is something to consider. And it's just that's on a smaller scale, but the bigger scale is someone's dog at a school does something stupid and then schools ban dogs completely. Like that's the kind of level that this can go to. So if something happens in a Queensland state school, then Queensland Education go, you know what? We've entertained you lot with these dogs on the school property for, you know, 10 years, 15. We've entertained this for a while now, but sick of all these dogs barking at people complaining. The report that came through to us last week, the incident report that I mentioned earlier, it is a dog behaving poorly, like no obedience, no manners, not toilet trained, disruptive in the environment that it's in, people in the environment that it's in haven't consented, it's still being encouraged to interact with them, the handler's just glossing over all of that and saying, you know, like you'll get used to the dog, like that sort of stuff. This ticking every box on like, okay, but then everyone's experience of this dog sucks. So what's going to, you know, and that particular situation, it's not a school, but nothing's going to, sometimes it's quite contained, basically. But eventually at some stage, something's going to go down with a dog and then the higher ups are going to get involved and then they can just like that make a blanket decision and go, no more dogs in Queensland education schools, no more dogs in Brisbane Catholic schools or whatever, like whatever these bodies are. They can do that. And then all of us are going to be kicked out and over here going, what do we do? Like, and that beautiful stuff that you shared about Benny and his work with his little people at the beginning of the episode, that's what we're going to be missing out on. And you mentioned like that the teacher said they're going to put it in one school. That's what we need. We need for things like that to be recorded in one school, because there'll come a point where we have to argue our case and go, hey, just so you know, there is a lot of benefit that's happening from having these dogs here. I don't think that the problem is dogs in schools. I think that it's a problem that the handlers aren't trained and they don't know how to read their dogs. They don't know how to meet expectations. They don't know that expectations even exist. They think it's a free-for-all. And then their dogs that are in schools or their dogs that are in allied health clinics or whatever, they're the ones that are causing these problems. That's what we're seeing, certainly from my reporting button on the website and things that I've been made aware of along the grapevine. That's definitely what we're seeing, is that we make mistakes too, you know, like we're not perfect. We make mistakes too, but this haphazard like stuff where it's like accidents happen, mistakes happen, but how you reflect and respond to that, I think is really important. And it worries me that particular handler at your school thinks I should keep bringing my dog here. I'm not surprised that when you first approached her, she was like, get out of my face, lady. Like, because for sure, most of us would have a little moment of like panic, and like, she probably knew it was coming too, because she knows you run the grandpa program. So she's probably waiting for this moment, and then it happens, and then she's just like, no, I don't need that. Get away from me. But if that's how we're going to be handling stuff, then are we really ready to be handling an animal in a school? I think that we need more accountability around that stuff, and we need support, which it didn't look like she had.
No, that's right. And from my understanding, she seemed not open to the idea of gaining support either.
Mm.
Kind of a one-person show. Yeah, but anyway, But I'm really thankful that we didn't get all shut down, and that, you know, that things have changed. Yeah. It was a big relief. So
yeah, it is. Well, for now, because the dog's still there. But, you know, maybe, you know, honestly, if they've found a good trainer or whatever, that could get sorted out. But yeah.
Just think about that podcast where you talked about when a dog has a traumatic, it gets a fright, and the neural pathway that is laid down attached to that event is so much stronger than if they just had that event.
Yeah.
Without the fright, you know, came around a corner, didn't get a fright, and they come around a corner and get a big fright, then going around corners is an issue. That the amount of counter conditioning required to undo that is thousands of hours, I don't know how many hours, but huge.
Yeah.
And I'm poor dog handler who isn't interested or doesn't have the motivation or the time or the energy to fix that.
Yeah,
that was always at the back of my mind as well, is that this is going to take a little bit of undoing, because it's being reinforced every time a male comes into the room. And like you were saying, that dog's being successful in that distance in creating behaviour, and it's strengthened. Like, that must be some superhighway by now. And the amount of work to undo that is going to be quite a bit. So, yeah,
Well, we wouldn't know until we worked with the dog, like exactly what it's going to take. But there's definitely, every time the dog gets to practice that and is successful, it's getting worse. It's definitely getting worse. And then we as we've discussed on this podcast so many times, we have to deal with the underlying issue, which is that the dog has some kind of insecurity or something, or some kind of something in the dynamic with the relationship with the handler over some things that they've lived through together. There's something going on for that dog, and we need to figure out what that is and deal with that. We can't just say don't bark at people. So that takes a bit of work to do that, and it's usually something that you're going to need, unless you're pretty savvy on the tools yourself. By that I mean pretty savvy with observing canine behavior, reflecting on it, problem solving, making a plan, enacting the plan, reflecting on the plan, altering the plan, reenacting the plan. Unless you're pretty savvy with that sort of stuff because you've been doing that kind of thing for a while, it's hard to work through these things by yourself. So you kind of need a professional, like a dog training professional, to help you, because that's what they do every day. But there's often personal work that's got to be done too to become the person that within yourself that your dog needs you to be. And that can take a long time, that sort of stuff. So, and all of us are in a different place in our lives where sometimes that's not even on the cards. Like, that's not even something that we can address right now because we're just in survival mode. But a lot of the time, like, that's what is needed, is that we need to become the person that that particular animal needs us to be to guide them. Or we pay someone else to guide them for a while and then, you know, hope that the issues get resolved to a point that's at the handler's level. So an example of that. So I work with, you know, obviously dogs, but horses as well, everyone knows, and I work with humans. So there's a lot of crossover in the either observing and or with humans listening and then thinking, reflecting, making a plan, and then, you know, enacting the plan, come back, evaluate the plan, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of that that goes on, right, across the species. My horse wouldn't get on the float Sunday morning, and I hadn't tried to put on a float for like a year, and I was just going to do a little trial run because I'm just getting back into taking the horse's places. Anyway, long story short, I had to abandon it because I was going to be late. I was actually just going to my neighbor's house. It's like two doors down because she was holding a clinic. So I was like, I always walk there, but I thought I should float there to get this horse back into the float. Wouldn't get in the float. I spent 25 minutes and I felt myself tip into frustration, Christine. And I was like, oh, good. Now we're never getting in the float. So great. As soon as you tip into like, okay, because you just got to be consistent and patient. Okay, hop on the float. This is not the right place out here. In there is the right place. This is not the right place. In there's the right place. Christine's got horses as well, guys. As soon as I tipped into get on the fucking float, I'm like not going to get there in time. And I was really keen. It was a little cattle clinic. And I was like, it was only a 90-minute thing. So I was like, I don't want to be late, like, and miss out. Get on the fucking float. As soon as you tip to that, there's no more float letting. That's it. Yeah. Like, because the horse, especially this horse, is like, not with that attitude, lady. Like, obviously there's something bad happening or you wouldn't be feeling that way, like, towards me, you know. So I just had to, like, okay, don't worry about it, and which I don't want to do, because then we're dealing with, well, she's having a win by saying I'm not going on the float, and then me going, okay, fine, we won't go on the float. We don't really want to do that, but in that situation where I can feel myself go, get on the fucking float, I'm like, okay, never mind, forget it, to unhook that, blah, blah, blah. Luckily, my partner was, I'm like, can you just drive the car down? I put my saddle and everything. I was, oh, God, like, I haven't tacked up the horse. Normally, I just tack her up and walk down there. Oh. So I'm like, right, we're just walking down the street. That's it. Forget about it. Because I just wanted to go and get on with it. And I was like, God damn it. Like, I set that up all wrong. And I didn't really think it through, the plan, that well. I thought it through a bit because I'd put my other horse on there who also needs practice to get out and about. So I thought, I'll just take them both down there and leave him tight. Anyway, it was a training plan that I had thought through. And then when it didn't work, it was obvious to me why it didn't work. And I was like, damn it. Anyway, do our cattle clinic. She's just magic, beautiful, all good. Bring her home. Okay, honey. Get on the float.
We've got one old guy who just won't get on a float. And like, if there is no moving a horse when they don't want to move.
No, it is. Yeah, they're a big animal. And it's even the same with my livestock guardian dog. Like, I'm doing now, I've got to retrain her, get in my car for another reason. But anyway, I'll talk about that another day. But we got home and I'm like, because I'm relaxed now and I've had fun at the clinic. She's had fun chasing cows around. So we go, okay, a couple of feet up on the float, give her a snack. Good girl. Okay, back in the paddock. Bring her out next. I'm like, right, I've got a new plan. I'm going to feed her in the float. So I was talking to my partner about it. She's the kind of horse where she doesn't respond well to pressure. Like, she's got a really low threshold. If you increase the pressure, she just shuts down. She just goes into total freeze. And I hate it because I'm like, okay, she's like a deer in headlights. And she's just like, you got to bring your pressure right down. Kind of like what you're saying about your husband's tone. You actually need to bring everything right down, take a few breaths, and just gently show her this is what this means, this directional pressure. It just means this. And she'll do it. She'll do anything you ask if she understands and if she's under threshold before she gets a fright. She just came like that out of the wild. So yesterday morning, I'm like, right. And the totally different scenario. Up on the float. I clipped her feed bucket on the stallion divider and she's in there.
Aww. Eating her food.
Straight on. I sent a little photo to my horse trainer because when I got to my neighbours, who's my horse trainer, I was like, I can see a float training session for us in our future, just so you know. But I sent a little video to her going, okay, we're on the float this morning. Got on the float. I actually took a really cute video. I've got her on the float. She just walked straight up, backed her out, asked her up. So she's eating. Okay, that's enough, back out. She's like, so I'm creating, do you know how we talk about box feeding?
Yeah.
Pat introduces all to box feeding. So this is what I mean, guys, by like being able to grab these things. I'm thinking the reason I'm feeding her in there is because I want it to be like the box, right? I want you, because she's the kind of horse, she has to choose to go in there. You can't chase her in because she can't handle that. And I don't want her in that state in the float. I want her calm in the float. So I'm like, right, she has to choose to go in there. I'm just going to have to use the food, go slowly. She's like box feeding. I want you to choose to go in there and that's the good place to be. You know, she's exactly what I thought would happen. I'm like, okay, back up. And she's like, goes back halfway and she's like, I want to come back in the float because my food's in there. I'm like, we can't. You can't. You got to get out. And she's like, this sucks. So get her out. Right there. Okay, walk up. She's like walking up the float. Like, and so now I can, you know, bang the side, make noise and all that sort of stuff, which is, that's what was freaking her out on Saturday. Anyway, this is 2 days later. So point being, to try and work through that stuff on your own, really tricky. Unless you've had I've got lots of horses. I've trained lots of horses. I've got lots of dogs. I've trained lots of dogs. That's what I mean by the difference between being able to evaluate, run your ideas past someone. I'm doing that with my trainers all the time. I tell you guys, I've got trainers all the time. I run ideas past people. I bounce ideas off my partner all the time. He's so patient. Like, he'll just let me just talk through and I'm, you know, talking through like, this is what I reckon. Da, 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 da. He's like, oh yeah. Okay. Blah, blah. And that's what I want for people. That's what I want for people. And that's what our aim was with you approaching this handler first before going straight to a line manager, was that we could go, hey, like, we can help you rather than you trying to figure this out all on your own. So my closing point that I'd like to make, I'll give you, you can think about your closing point now and I'll say mine first and then you can do one. If you guys have something similar going on in your workplace, we understand how tricky the dynamics can be. Remember that you have got our report an incident button on our website. You can report an incident anonymously. Just make sure you put enough details in there that I can do something about it, which the one that came through this week does have enough details that I can reach out, because I will reach out to people even though they're not our dog, they're not our dogs. That's okay. I'll still reach out to people and offer a bit of advice, or give the offer to advice. I like to ask people if they would like some advice before I give advice. I think that's the better way to go. But anyway, so we've got that, but also reach out to me, Christine, just send us an email. And then, you know, that's it. We've been chatting about this, you know, it's been a little while that since this happened. So reach out to us. We'll see if there's anything that we can help bounce around ideas. I know that this stuff is really, really tricky. If this is your own dog, so if you think you're the one that is heading for being reported, don't just take your bandana and coat off and cover up the logo and don't do that. Reach out and let us know, because, you know, we will likely have a trainer in your area that we can recommend if we're not near you, or if it's something that we, you know, is beyond my scope of practice. So reach out to us, let us know. Even if you want to, you know, just hypothetically mention some things, bring some things up, do that, just do something about it. Because like I said in the Growling podcast, a lot of the time there's something that can be done about this stuff. But if we let it go too long, it gets worse and worse, and then it's a problem. Okay. Mm-hmm. What's your closing piece of advice, Christine?
Well, I was just thinking about that story with your horse not wanting to get on the float. Because yeah. I know that, like, how frustrating that is, because we've got an old guy who does the exact same thing. But I just love that story because you came along another day and, you know, the training went exactly how you wanted it to go, and got on the float, backing up and getting on and all that. And I just love that, because every day is a new day, and, you know, we can start afresh. And if something hasn't worked previously, we can try to do something different, you know. And I often say that to the kids as well. Oh, did that work? Oh, well, let's try something different. See what happens then, you know, that kind of, yeah. I just love it that every day is a new day, and we can just leave it all behind and just take the good bits and build on them, you know. And I just, that's all that I would say about that situation, because it was challenging, but it's through the challenges, you know, it sounds really patronising, but through the challenges that we do experience that growth, that experiential learning, and get stronger and wiser and do it better next time, you know. And, yeah, I'm just really thankful to have the support of you guys, because I wouldn't have been able to approach it from with a strong information base to go to my manager with that evidence-based information to say, this is a problem and I'm really concerned. Yeah. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for bringing it to me, because that's what I want, is for people to do that. And, you know, we haven't mentioned this, but when you bring it to me, you're effectively bringing it to supervision, really. So even though we're talking about dog stuff, you can still consider it in that sort of realm of, like, well, I've gone to my training organization, and then you can blame so much stuff on me. You can say things like, well, the head of our training organization has instructed me to report this. So, or even if the line manager got upset about, well, why'd you go to the person first? Blame it on me. You can say, well, that's what our head training, blah, 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 of our organization asked me to do it that way. Mm-hmm. Put a bit of blame on me, because, you know, what are they going to do to me? Nothing. Like, just be like, stay out of it, Sam. And I'll be like, sorry.
No, I'm quite happy to own it. They get a lot of bang for their buck out of a chaplain. You get a dog boot, you know, and chaplains don't get paid a lot of money. It's all for the love, you know. I'm just really thankful to be able to do this job, because hubby pays the bills.
Great. Fabulous.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Christine, because I know it was a bit bit sort of, oh, should we talk about this on the pod? Like, it's about a person, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, our intention wasn't to shit all over somebody and, you know, do all that. It's our intention is to use this situation as a learning, something for us to learn from and to talk about, and like from all the different aspects. So we talked about, you know, how tricky it was for you and how if this would be really hard for her. And we wanted to try and, we don't know how supported she is, so we did try and, you know, consider that as well. And life will be what it is and things will happen however they happen. But yeah, hopefully people have enjoyed listening to your story and learning about yours and Benny's little journey and, yeah, taking something away. So thank you so much for your time.
Having me on.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in studying with us but you have a few more questions before you get started, please get in touch with us by emailing info@therapydog.com.au or visiting our website www.therapydog.com.au for more information and our FAQs.